ability to follow the Ten Commandments with all our heart. These men believed you couldn't even call yourself an American if you subvert the word of God. In his farewell address, Washington said, "You can't have national morality apart from religious principle," and it's true. Because right now we have nearly 150,000 kids carrying guns to these war zones we call public schools. In the 40s and 50s, student problems were chewing gum and talking. In the 90s, rape and murder are the trend. The only way this nation can even hope to last this decade is put God in America.
The only hope for America is Jesus.
Said the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. So when you eliminate the word of God from the classroom and politics, you eliminate the nation that word protects. America is now number one in teen pregnancy and violent crime, number one in illiteracy, drug use, and divorce. Every day a new Holocaust of 5,000 unborn die, while pornography floods our streets like open sewers. America's dead and dying hand is on the threshold of the church, while the spirit of Sodom and Gomorrah vexes us all. When it gets to the point where people would rather come out of the closet than clean it, it's the sign that judgment of God is going to fall. If there's ever been a time to rise up, church, it's now. And as the blood-bought saints of the living God proclaim, that it's time to sound the alarm from the church house to the White House and say, we want God in America again. And proclaim that one nation under God is our demand. And send this evil lifestyle back to Satan where it came from. And let the word of God revive our dying land. For Jesus Christ is coming back again in all his glory, and every eye shall see him on that day. That's why a new anointing of God's power is coming on us. To boldly tell the world you must be saved. Because astrology won't save you. Your horoscope won't save you. The Bible says these things are all farce. If you're born again, you don't need to look to the stars for your answers. Because you can look to the very one who made those stars. History tells us time and time again, to live like there's no God makes you a fool. If you want to see kids live right, stop handing out condoms. And start handing out the word of God in school.
America. Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you're out there across America listening to us, of course, you're always welcome to call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us one of my favorite friends. It's Karen Lee Bixman, the investigative reporter. We're going to be talking about what's happening in the world financially. Now, I want to preface our remarks by saying that I'm not a financial advisor, and Karen Lee isn't. Karen Lee is simply a reporter and telling you what history gives us and what we can learn from history. When Herbert Hoover became President of the United States in 1929, one of his remarks was, we're going to have two chickens in every pot and a car in every garage. The idea was prosperity was here. Things were not going to change. Well, at the end of his time in office, everybody had two chickens in every garage. And it almost seemed like the American dream was over. So I'm going to let Karen Lee get into the background of how they created the Great Depression. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, it was created. Our economic cycles are manipulated by the central banks. Of course, we were told that the reason we had to have a Federal Reserve System, which is really just another name for a privately owned central banks, created to help the bankers, maintained to prosper the bankers, and of course concealed, because the bankers don't want you to know what they're up to and how they've been fleecing the system. They make Enron and Tyco and Global Crossing look like pikers, their leaders. Well, let me get back at the idea that what had happened was that they created the artificial prosperity, well, of the 20s, and then in the 1929 era, they began to contract the money supply. They did that intentionally and maliciously to create a crisis to justify pulling in all of the gold and taking America then off the gold standard, stealing the gold from the American people under the color of law, and then, of course, establishing a fiat money system. And with that as the background, here's Karen Lee Bixman. Hi, Karen Lee. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Yes, the title of the latest issue of the Investigative Reporter is, Has the Second Great Depression Already Begun? And I believe it has. What I have done in this issue, I have compared the period of the 1920s, and then especially the period of 1929 to 1932, with 1999 to the present time, 2002.
And, of course, most people don't remember that when the Great Depression stuck in October of 1929, it wasn't straight on down from there at all. Weren't there a lot of recoveries and then going down again and then recoveries? So you never could be quite certain what was happening.
Well, right, and when I did this comparison, the similarities were absolutely shocking. A little history. Now, in the 1920s, this was a time of just unlimited prosperity. That was the time when time payments were introduced and people were starting to buy toasters or stoves or whatever consumer goods on monthly payments. And so for the first time, the country really started using credit. Again, many, many people had started to invest in the stock market. And they called the time the new era. They said that, you know, the country prosperity was here. Things could only get better. You know, we would never see any more poverty. But this time of the psychology of the day, calling it a new era, that was very temporary, of course. That ended with the crash of 29. But people don't realize that that same mentality was revitalized 70 years later, because in the 1990s, what did we call the economy? It was called the new economy. It was the same psychology that was used in the 1920s. And lest people forget, a few years back here, I quoted a quote from September of 1999 in the Atlantic Monthly. There was an article by James Glassman and Kevin Hassett called Dow 36,000.
Dow 36,000.
Yes, and in this article, they said that, I will quote, Wall Street analysts and financial journalists were warned that stocks were dangerously overvalued and that investors were caught up in a euphoria. He said they were wrong. Stocks are now, we believe, in the midst of a one-time rise in the neighborhood of 36,000 for the Dow Jones.
So that reminds me of when the Japanese stock market was at 36,000, and they were talking about how it was going to go to 100,000.
Right.
And
so now, this
now
is
it's down about 10,000.
A few years ago, but remember, in the 90s, this is what they were saying. This was the new economy, the same thing as the new era of the 20s. But, of course, when we saw the NASDAQ collapse in 2000, that ended all the talk of the new economy. But again, when we compare these years, it's unbelievable. For example, I have a quote from Business Week of November 2nd, 1929. Now, this is after the crash. They say the Wall Street crash doesn't mean that there will be any general or serious business depression. Business has come home again, sound in wind and limb, financially stronger than ever before. Well, what people don't realize is that when the market crashed in October of 29, it began to rally in November of 29. And a lot of the investors that had lost money, they jumped right back into the stock market again. And again, their intention was to regain all the money that they had lost during the panic. And they never questioned whether it could be done. It was just a matter of time. Well, now we've seen the same thing happen. When our market crashed in 2000, we have heard nothing but rhetoric. How, you know, it's going to climb back up again, everything is fine, the economy is wonderful. In fact, we even had, first we had talk of a recession, but then Secretary Treasurer Paul O'Neill on the 4th of the, March 4th, actually came out and says it seems quite clear now that our economy never suffered a recession. So we are hearing the exact same rhetoric that took place from November 15th, 1929, and what people don't realize is the market did not bottom until July of 1932. But in between that period, the market did reach a peak in March of 1930, where it almost regained 50% of its value. And I believe that we are now in that same period of time. Our NASDAQ crashed in March of 2000. This March of 2002, we saw our market peak. And now I believe that we are on the same crash course, down to the negative territory, just like happened in that 29-32 time frame. And it is amazing, Dr. San, when I've gone back and I have looked at the quotes by the president, by government figures, academia, corporate, it is almost identically the same thing that we are hearing now.
Like deja vu all over again.
The one I love the best is in June of 1930, there were a group of concerned businessmen that met with President Herbert Hoover to discuss the financial climate. And his reply was, gentlemen, you're 60 days too late. The depression is over.
And that was, of course, was Herbert Hoover talking to the businessmen.
Yes.
And, of course, but everything is being done. Certainly our stockbrokers are telling people to buy. Now is a good time to get back in. It's a good time to get back in because, you know, it's going to go back up again.
yes.
In fact, there's a wonderful advertisement on television. I don't even know what they were advertising, but it shows all these stockbrokers, and they're all telling their clients to buy. And one of them is looking at a ham sandwich and saying on the telephone, "Well, I'm looking at your portfolio here, and I can tell you now is the time for you to buy." And each one is saying, "Buy, buy." And one of the fellows in this sort of boiler room atmosphere says, "Yes, and sell." And suddenly everybody is silent. Everybody's looking at him. You know, sell. And he said, I made a mistake. This is the time to buy. And this is what they're telling people to do.
Yes.
And unfortunately, more and more and more of the people are getting suckered back in again because they don't remember history. And as George Santayana said, those who cannot remember history are condemned to repeat it.
Well, this is exactly what happened in the period of from November 29, when the market started to rally, until it finally bottomed out in 1932. This is the exact same thing that is happening now. And again, the similarities are just unbelievable. After the collapse of 1929, a lot of stories began to emerge about corporate stock manipulation, insider trading, different unscrupulous business practices that went on. And one of the most famous scams of that time dealt with RCA. This stock was falsely inflated by a pool of investors. They traded the stock between themselves, and they actually artificially drove up the price. Then as the price kept going up, people would buy. Well, finally, those who purchased at the top, the original pool had already made millions. They bailed out, and of course, then the stock collapsed and everybody lost their money. You know, all we'd have to do is substitute the name RCA with Enron.
And you know what's really so interesting about Enron, because I followed this very closely because they were involved with the whole energy scam here in California. And their gross income was something like $50 billion here a couple of years ago. Maybe it was the year 2000. I think it was probably 2000 or part of 2000. And, of course, they did that not because they were selling electricity, but because they were selling these trades back and forth. They were buying and selling and buying and selling, and nothing was happening. Nothing was moving. There was no electricity moving. It was all just trades to make it appear that they had this massive business going, $50 billion of energy traded, and it was all simply on paper.
Yeah, now, that's the same thing that happened with RCA.
Right, and of course, really what's so interesting with Enron, if you stop and look at it, are they going after Enron? No, they're going after their accountants. They're going after Anderson & Anderson, and now, of course, they've destroyed the company. Not that I have any sympathy for the people who committed the terrible crimes, who are shredding the documents for Anderson & Anderson, but, you know, to destroy the entire company because of that, and all the people are going to be thrown out of work when Anderson has to close its doors, or just about close its doors. But I'm going to be very interesting to see if they really go after Kenneth Lay, who was the largest single contributor to George W. Bush's presidential race. This was during the primary. I've forgotten how many million dollars Kenneth Lay himself and Enron gave to George W. Bush. Is this whole effort to get Anderson & Anderson simply a diversion to take us away from who's really responsible for this? Kenneth Lay said, "I had no idea what my company was doing," and anybody who believes that probably is still holding on to their Enron stock, waiting for it to come back again.
Well, and what we're seeing here, again, the comparison is uncanny, Dr. Stan, because we are seeing stories every single day come out in the press of corporate manipulation, insider trading, false earning reports, and this is daily now. What this is doing, it has eroded confidence in the market because to buy a stock, you don't even know if that's the real earning rate or not. But I think the thing that is making people so angry is the CEOs know what is going on. In fact, in the month of May, 80 CEOs retired. And I have said previously in my past newsletters that 80% of the companies now being traded on the street are using the same type of manipulative accounting practices.
Now was that May of this year? That
May 80, of this year.
80 CEOs retired.
Have retired.
Is that sort of like the rats leaving the ship?
Yes, and the thing is, these CEOs can benefit because they can make a lot of money. They get big retirement packages of millions of dollars, and they walk away. Well, I think the thing that is angering people is they lose their money in the stock, and yet they see the CEOs, nothing happens to them. They haven't gone to jail. Even Merrill Lynch now was recently fined $100 million by the SEC for telling people to buy stock that they knew was worthless. Well, we've seen no one go to jail, and quite frankly, $100 million is nothing more than a slap on the hand for Merrill Lynch.
Well, I think the interesting thing was that when Enron was collapsing, they gave their executives 600 and some odd million dollars. And, of course, the tragedy was that their employers were forced to invest their retirement funds in Enron stock that just collapsed. And yet, with the whole thing come tumbling down, $600 million in bonuses given to the executives who, of course, had robbed the shareholders, who had robbed the employees. And I just hope and pray they don't get away with that.
Well, so far we have seen nothing. The SEC that is supposed to be, you know, oversight, they have done nothing. There's been little rhetoric and talk, but there's been no major criminal prosecutions in any of this. So this, what this has done is just, it has eroded the confidence. People are getting out of the market. They're not buying. The Vickers Stock Research is a very prominent investment newsletter. They reported that there is now a ratio of 4.1 insider sales for every insider purchase. And I have a quote from a trader at, or the head of trading for SG Gowen in New York. And he says, there's no reason right now to do any buying. The mood is miserable. He says, we're bunkering down. More and more people are realizing that this corruption is having major, major implications for the market. Because why, you know, in to have a recovery, to have a turnaround, to have an upswing in the market, there must be confidence there. And when you daily, the latest one I heard, I think it's Emplone, it's Martha Stewart's company, there were allegations of insider trading. Well, why should you buy a stock when you don't even know if that price earnings, as is stated, is the actual price earnings? So there's no reason for anybody to buy stock right now.
Well, what's really one of the interesting things is that because of the SEC's failure to do what it's supposed to do, they're talking about taking its power away and transferring it to a privately owned company in Europe headed by a man named Paul Volcker. Now, most people don't know who Paul Volcker is, but he was former chairman of the Federal Reserve System. He's one of the consummate insiders, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, closely tied to the Rockefeller interests. And, of course, they're really behind almost all of the financial machinations that go on in our country. And the whole idea will be, because SEC has done such a poor job, gee, we've got to come up with a solution. We're going to transfer the power to a privately owned a corporation headed by none other than Paul Volcker. Isn't that interesting?
Well, yes, it's what it is. You have the elitist watching out for the elitist.
Right. It gives incest a bad name.
Well, you know, again, here in 1932, again, just like what we're seeing, but in 1932, the American public, seeing all this manipulation in the market, insider trading, they were really called out for retribution against those people. And the government did hold hearings, and we saw a lot of laws passed. One piece of legislation from those 1932 hearings was the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933. Well, this actually made it illegal for banks to be involved in the buying and selling of securities. But that was repealed in 1999. That was one of the last things that Bill Clinton did. I mean, now we have banks like J.P. Morgan Chase and Citigroup. They handle more securities than some of the large brokerage houses. So this is a false conception that people have. I've talked to people and they said, well, you know, we'll never have another 1929 crash because all those laws that were passed to protect us.
You know, like the Glass-Steagall Act that they repealed just before our most recent crash. And it's just the same pattern over and over again. They said, oh, we don't need Glass-Steagall anymore. You know, we just want the banks to go ahead and everybody's going to get a prosper. Well, yeah, the insiders have prospered tremendously. But, of course, an awful lot of people have lost their life savings. An awful lot of people have lost their pension plans that were invested in their pension funds because, of course, they invested in great stocks like Enron and Tyco and Global Crossing.
Well, what I believe what we have seen, what we have witnessed from the period of March of 2000 when the NASDAQ crashed up into March of this year is a false boom. Just like from November 1929 until the market peaked in March 29th of 1930. Now, during that time, again, remember, the market actually recovered about 50% of its 1929 October loss. But then from March of 30, it just kept going down until finally the market bottomed out in 1932. This is exactly what we've seen repeated, and I now believe that right now our economy, these markets are on a crash course. I have written in this letter that I believe that everybody needs to be concentrating on the economics right now because I believe that we are very close, almost really, we're at the point now where I believe that NASDAQ could crash any time. And I believe that the NASDAQ is going to be the market that is going to crash first. When stock traders, who if you follow the market very closely, all stock traders are familiar with what they call a resistant point. In other words, the market will go up, it will come down. When it reaches a certain low point, then you'll have some traders, some investors will say, I'm going to get out, I'll sell. It'll come back up, it'll hit that resistant point. Every time it hits that resistance low, more traders, more people bail. Finally, then it goes below that low, and then you create another resistance point. Well, the real low that everybody is worried about right now is in September 21st last year. That's when we saw the low point for both the Dow and the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ got down to 1387. Most traders that I've talked to, they know that when the market reaches that point again, down to that 1387, it's all over. Then we're going to see a mass sell-off, a panic sell-off, if you will, on the NASDAQ. And I do believe the NASDAQ will crash, and then within days we could have the Dow and the S&P follow suit.
Well, I think, of course, back in the 1930s, we had a solid industrial base. The problem was that most people didn't need another refrigerator, another car, and another telephone. Today, we do not have a solid industrial base. We have transported, in fact, we have financed the shipment of our industrial base south of the border, to Southeast Asia, to Communist China. And we've done this intentionally and maliciously. At one time, we were the greatest creditor nation in the world. Today, we're the greatest debtor nation in the world, running a deficit of $1 billion a day. And, of course, that money is coming back to America, of course, and it's buying up our industries. It's buying up our food markets. It's buying up what little we have here of real value as far as our natural resources. But the profits from that will not remain here in America. Those will be transported overseas. And, of course, what you're going to see is a falling tax base. This is why here in California we're talking about a $24 billion deficit. Why, you know, gross budget of Russia is only about $35 billion. We're talking about a $24 billion deficit here in the state of California. People have no idea of the implications of what's coming down the line. And you know what's really so interesting to me, Karen Lee, is that if you go back and you look at this period of the 1930s, There was only one thing that went up at that time, and that was gold and silver stocks. And there's a wonderful book by Curtis Dahl, and I've forgotten, it was My Misunderstood Father-in-Law, something of the sort. And Curtis Dahl was FDR's son-in-law. And he talks about going to see his father-in-law, the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and sitting in the waiting room, and there in the waiting room is a man named Bernard Baruch, and just the two of them. And so Curtis Dahl said, you know, you have one of those rare opportunities in your lifetime, and you muff it. He said to Bernard Baruch, Mr. Baruch, who at that time was one of the richest men in the world, do you have any recommendations, something that might be good to buy? And Mr. Baruch looked at him and said, well, gentlemen, sir, I own half of the world's supply of silver. I think silver is an excellent buy. And Curtis Dahl scratched his head and saw his father-in-law and left. And then Bernard Baruch went in to see his father-in-law. And, of course, Curtis Dahl didn't do anything. And 2 days later, the government doubled the price of silver. And, of course, you know, one of those things, if he had invested, he could have done very well. But, of course, he didn't take the advice. But what's interesting now, if you look at, for instance, silver stocks and some of the silver and mining stocks, they're about the only thing that's going up. They're up dramatically in this last year, whereas so many of the other stocks are going down dramatically. Have you noticed that?
Oh, yes, and there is a silver shortage. Silver and gold are going to be the best investments that anybody can buy. There's a shortage of silver. They are not getting it out of the mines because it's just not profitable to do so. So eventually, when people realize that we're not going to be able to get any more silver out of those mines anytime soon, yeah, you're going to see silver escalate. But, you know, getting back to the scenario that we were talking about, Dr. Stan, I wanted to focus in on some of these laws that were put through during the Depression. And one thing I wanted to focus on, too, was the banking situation. You know, traditionally, when a stock market crashes, people run to the bank. That seems to be their first indication. And again, now, many people are under the false assumption that I've talked to. They said, well, you know, we don't have to worry about our banks failing. We have the FDIC in place. Well, the FDIC, of course, was another Depression-era legislation that all it does, really, it was established through the Banking Act of 1933. This is like a placebo given to people to make them believe that they can safely put their money in the bank and they will never lose their money. Their funds are guaranteed. It was recently raised to $130,000. Well, if people are familiar with the fractionalized banking system, realize that money is not just all in the vault in the back of the bank. They only have to keep a fraction of that money on deposit in the bank. Well, you would have a bank holiday or a run on the bank if everybody decided to run and get their money out all at one time. Now, that could be one cause of banking failure, but people need to know that in this day of global trading, money is transferred from bank to bank, country to country in a matter of seconds. You have huge global traders like George Soros, for example, who manages a hedge fund. These men, back in 1997, literally, were responsible of bringing down the currencies of countries like Russia, Brazil, Indonesia, Thailand. What they do, they get together and they actually bet to see if this currency can withstand, and they bet that that currency is going to fall. And they did that when we had the Asian Tiger crisis back in 1997. They actually brought the currencies of those countries down.
All right, well, we're going to have to take a short break here. 3-minute break. If you'd like a cup of coffee or drink of water, and of course, when we get back, we welcome your calls out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest is Karen Lee Bixman, the investigative reporter. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent on you out there in the listening audience who believe in what we're doing to help us. And, of course, people join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and, of course, those are the people, ordinarily, they get our monthly newsletter, and they get our four best tapes of the month. And, of course, that's how we really have the mainstay of our support. And then there are other people who believe, and sometimes they'll give a one-time gift. Right now, of course, our hope is that we're going to be able, first of all, to have a new program, starting a syndicated program every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, and it'll be heard in the Great Northwest. And we already have six stations that are going to be pulling that down, so it'll be heard from Washington all the way to New York. And our hope, of course, we can begin filling in between times. So that's really going to be one of our major programs. And actually, I believe we're going to go ahead starting on the 6th of July with that program. It'll be on satellite. It'll be on the Internet. I believe it'll be on the Internet. Anyway, it'll be on satellite, and it'll certainly be heard in a number of major areas across America. And with time, of course, we hope that more and more stations will pull it down. Now that is really a fait accompli, we seem to be have enough funds now to do this for 6 months. There are another network with 17 stations that's made us a very attractive offer, and of course it's just for a Saturday program, half an hour a week, but it's amazing how much information you can get out in a half an hour if you have a well-planned program. And so if any of you out there would have not already contributed, you may already be a member of the Radio Liberty family, or you may not, but we're hoping that some people will make a six-month commitment so that we'll know how the funds for 6 months, or nearly in 6 months, why the programs begin to finance themselves. So if you believe in what we're doing, you can get in touch with us at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we hope that people will make a six-month commitment so much so that we'll know that we'll be able to fund what we're doing. You have to be responsible in this business. There are too many people who do talk radio and get overextended and then have to cut back. Well, so far we haven't had to cut back on anything that was worthwhile, and hopefully we won't have to. So if you'd like to help us, of course you know our number. It's 1-800-5-448-927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. America, our future, our family, our freedom, our families are under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Karen Lee Bixman, the investigative reporter, and this is the time when I have to ask Karen Lee how people can get in touch with you. Now, you can't mention the price, but you can certainly mention how people can get in touch with you if they would like to learn more about the your investigative reporter report.
Okay. Well, they can call our office. The number is 562-493-8957. That's 562-493-8957.
All right, fine. And that's Karen Lee Bixman, the investigative reporter. And, of course, right now we've got Mike on the line here in Santa Cruz. And if you're out there and you wanted to ask us a question or make a comment, the number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY out across America, 464-8295. That's 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California, and out across the world, 831-464-8295. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Oh, good, Stan. I wondered if Karen could talk any about the Enron documents that were a few months ago turned over to the judiciary, and then the Bushmen decided that they would like those documents to be turned over to the executive branch. And from there, they seem to have disappeared.
Disappeared? Oh, why? How could that have happened?
From public view, anyhow.
Right. I have never heard of that. Do you know anything at all about that, Carolyn?
I haven't, but word that I have received on the Enron scandal is they are really going to try to make it appear In other words, Arthur Andersen is going to be the fall guy for all of this.
Yeah. This is the way it's looking to me, Mike. In other words, what you do is you make a big issue out of one person who may or may not have anything to do with much of anything. Certainly Arthur Andersen was wrong, and one or two of the executives there certainly should go to prison for shredding documents that they knew the SEC wanted to. But this is the diversion, exactly as the trial, in my estimation, of Johnny Walker, a stupid young man who converted to the Muslim religion and joined the Taliban. But remember, we were backing and financing the Taliban at the time he joined them. But now he's on trial for his life. And this, of course, diverts our attention away from other things. And this is the way they play the game, because they know you can only have so much information in your mind or you begin to get confused. And so everything is a diversion to keep us from seeing what's really going on. It's like the old shell game. You've got a pea under one of three shells. They move them quickly, and you can't see what's going on. And I think that that's pretty well what's going to happen with Enron. It's going to be very interesting to see if any of the real culprits, the men who really cheated the people out of their life savings, goes to prison. Let's wait and see.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, those stories were in major media.
Well, if you have any of them, I would love to see them. If you have it, could
I think
you?
I probably saved a few.
All right, well, save a couple of those, because I'd not heard them being turned over to the executive department. But as I mentioned earlier, Kenneth Lay and Enron were the largest single supporter of the current administration during the electoral process. Okay, thanks so much, Mike.
Okay.
Okay, and we've got Mary on the line. Hi, Mary, where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm calling from Monterey.
Oh, Monterey, good to have you with us. You have a question or comment?
Yes, I was going to ask Karen if she could explain to the listeners a little more about George Soros and the G8 summit and the people from Davos.
Okay, well, the point that I wanted to kind of finish my thought on that, too.
All right, fine.
When I talk about global traders like George Soros and their hedge funds, I want to bring that out because, you see, if these global traders realized that there was going to be a crisis here, they could actually pull their funds out of out of this country, deposit them overseas, and you could have a scenario where our banks wouldn't even open up on Monday. On a Monday, that could be accomplished over the weekend. I say that because I have run across people who have told me, oh no, I can't take my money out of the bank because if I do that, that might cause a bank run, or what about all those other poor people who have their money in the bank? People have to realize that by you going down and taking your $50 or $100 or whatever it out of the bank, this is all run on an elitist global basis now. And again, when you have the power of a George Soros, and they're hedge fund traders, and again, if anybody remembers the Asian crisis that we had in 1997, where the economies of countries were just falling like dominoes. This is because George Soros and the big traders like them actually come in. We saw that happen in Mexico and then Russia, Thailand, Indonesia. They come in, they bet against the currency can't hold, the currency falls, and the whole country falls. So we could see the same scenario happen here.
Well, and that's my point. Isn't that the intent then, rather than to strengthen our federal government, it's to weaken it?
The whole big idea here is to collapse the economy of the United States. We'll get into more of this, but we have the dollar that is at a 17th month low against the euro. Gold is going up. We'll get into that a little further, too. But the whole idea is
the Tobin tax. Can you explain that?
That's a little off the subject.
Yeah,
no,
we don't even have to worry about the UN at this point. Because what I see, the next major crisis coming to this country is going to be the crash of our stock markets and total economic collapse. And the country's economy has to be destroyed. You can't have the One World Order come in and take charge. You can't have Father Homeland Security come in with his police state until you literally have the economy of the people, you have to have a chokehold around them where they have no money. They can't pay their bills and so forth. So,
well, and I think it's so too interesting, Karen Lee, is that the FDIC guarantees you'll get your money. They just don't guarantee when you'll get your money. In other words, yes, we'll give you your money, but it may be a year, 2 years from now. By then, the dollar may be worth a fraction, as it, for instance, in Argentina today, the people who trusted what their leaders told them, they've lost 70% of the value of their money, but they can't get their money. It's in the banks. And the only way that they can get, they're talking now about giving them bonds, which will be redeemable in 5 or 10 years. What do you think the present-day peso will be worth 5 to 10 years from now? It's already lost 70% of its value.
Well, and we are going to see major bank failures. And again, one of the big reasons for the bank failures are going to be derivatives. I've talked about this. I've written about this a lot. And when the economy comes tumbling down, all these loans, people that are in debt over their ears, we are going to see major bank failures through this economic crisis as well.
Anything else on the subject, Mary? Because I don't want to get on the Tobin test.
I guess I was just trying to get at the fact that these people, and they're the people from Davos, you know what I'm talking about, the G8 and everything?
Yes,
right.
I do, but again,
their intent is to collapse the economy.
Oh, yes, and that's, I think, a foregone conclusion. Anybody who even knows about the establishment of the Federal Reserve, knowing that that's a private corporation, the intent has always been that. But then if you're talking about the Tobin tax, the G8 and so forth, you're bringing it on a global economic level.
Okay, look, Mary, thank you very much.
You're
right on, though. You recognize what's going on. One of these times we'll do a program on the Tobin tax and how all of these things fit together. God bless you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, go ahead and pick up the story there, Karen Lee.
Yes, and there's many. So, again, I don't want people, because Dr. Stan, it just amazes me. I have talked to so many people who will say, oh, no, I won't take my money out of the bank because, you know, that'll cause the banks to fail. And what about all those other people? I fully believe that when these markets crash, that the president will go on TV and he will tell people to be calm, don't panic, leave your money in the bank, and anybody who does not will be looked at as they are unpatriotic. Most Americans will not have a clue. They will not know about derivatives, that these banks will fall from derivative holdings, or they won't know about the global trading that's going on. So they'll sit there and they will want to be patriotic Americans. They'll leave their money in the bank and they'll lose it. But the crisis that we have looming here is our dollar is falling against the euro. It is at a 17th month low right now, and we know what is going to happen. The dollar will be devaluated because the Treasury Department has already announced that they are printing the new currency. It is going to be a colored currency, and it will be issued within 12 months. Well, what will happen, we will have a dual currency system where you will have the new colored currency will be traded within the United States. Our present Federal Reserve notes will be traded outside of the United States. This will prevent anybody from hoarding dollars because you'll have to turn all your old currency in for the new. But this colored currency will, in essence, just be worthless paper.
Well, but that's what it is today. We have a fiat money system, and it is built entirely on trust in the fact that the Federal Reserve will do what's right, that our government will do what's right.
Mm-hmm. And then we have another situation going on with gold. I mean, gold has been manipulated. The price, I believe, should probably be closer to $800 if it wasn't being manipulated. But what is starting to happen is It is going to be beyond their ability to keep this price suppressed much longer, because we have a real crisis going on here. Most people that I have talked to, they see a danger that when gold reaches, I believe gold is stabilized now around 320, but they seem to think that when gold reaches between 340 or 360, then we're going to start falling into a danger zone for banks. We could start to see some banks failing because of the derivative position, because actually what has happened, people don't realize. You have central bankers who have leased their gold to large trading companies called bullion banks. This is like J.P. Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs. Those are bullion banks. Now, they were borrowed this gold at a 1% interest. What they have done, they have sold the gold, and again, that wreaked them a high interest payment. But now somewhere in this process, the central banks are going to have to be repaid. Now, if J.P. Morgan Chase goes out on the open market to buy gold, well, it's going to elevate the price of gold, and in the process, they're losing money. If they have to buy this gold at a higher rate of interest, they're going to lose more money. Well, somewhere in this mess, the central banks have to be repaid. But if these bullion banks cannot get the gold to repay, then you're going to default. So I think the crisis zone here, from talking to the experts, seems to be at 340 to 360 an ounce. And I have continually that J.P. Morgan Chase, I have said that Citibank or Citigroup, those are some of the banks that are going to fall in this mess because of their heavy derivative positions.
Now, basically what they have done, they've sold what they don't have, which reminds me of the old ditty, he who sells what isn't his and has to give it back or go to prison.
Yes. And, you know, this is going to be, I just see things coming down the economic food chain one after another after another. I mean, again, after the market crashes, we will probably see banks start to falter, or people will, there will be runs on the bank. I think we will see a riot scenario. Everything that we've seen in Argentina is just a mini preview.
Well, this is why they have actually built these detention camps, federal detention camps. They're planning on there being certainly the riots and civil unrest in America. And anybody who doubts that needs to get the four-tape set, or needs to consider getting a four-tape set on concentration camps, or the concentration camp special that is available. And, of course, if you would like to get in touch with us and find out about any of that, why, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. In fact, you had written about the concentration camps, about the federal directives, military directives on how to handle the civilian detainees on military camps 3 or 4 years ago, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, in 1996 I did a
right.
two-part series on concentration camps in America, and I believe I'm also one tape of your four-part set there, Dr. Stan.
You are one of the four tapes of the four-type sets. In fact, do you still have copies of that?
Yes, it's available.
Well, if anybody would like to learn more about that, Karen Lee's telephone number is 562-493-8957. That's 562-493-8957. People say it couldn't happen in America. They said it couldn't happen in Hitler's Germany. They said it couldn't happen in Benito Mussolini's Italy.